Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Have you ever wondered why rap music seems to sound so much better in a car? Or what Lauryn Hill's shooting percentage is? Or why Jay-Z name-checks Halle Berry's ex-husband? Writer and knower of all things hip-hop and rap, Shea Serrano certainly has. As a teenager growing up on the south side of San Antonio, Shea came of age in the golden era of 90s rap. So whether it was DMX, Lil' Kim, Jay-Z, or Outkast, the music and the videos that accompanied them still have meaning in Shea's life, and possibly in yours too, maybe even if you don't know it. So much so that he wrote a book all about it. His new book, Hip Hop and Other Things, which is out today, is the third installment of his best-selling Other Things series that also includes movies and basketball. And speaking of basketball, Shea has been busy. He recently narrated a hype video for the San Antonio Spurs. Here's a sample.
48 minutes. The time between tip-off and game. But what about the rest? The other 23 hours and 12 minutes in the day. In this city, that's the time we're defined by. Where the hard work happens and pride resides. Where community becomes culture and traditions take root. Loyalty like this doesn't expire with the shot clock. It's a lifestyle built by the moments that made us and turned long shots into legends.
2021 has been a good year for Shea. Over the summer, he was honored with the prestigious Si Se Puede Humanitarian Award from the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. And a new streaming series about his life has been optioned by Mike Schur, creator of The Good Place and Parks and Rec. Joining me now is Shea Serrano. Say, Shea, welcome back to the show.
Allison, how the heck are you?
I am doing great. All right, so let's just roll it all the way back. Let's go back in the time machine.
Okay.
We're talking to teenage Shea Serrano. Why does teenage Shea love hip-hop so much?
Man, because it's beautiful is why. This is what happens when you become, when you start to become a teenager. That's when you pull yourself away from the things that your parents are doing, right? So when I was growing up, my dad was listening to a lot of Tejano music, like Chalino Sanchez, La Tropa F, like all this kind of stuff, right? A classic rock as well. That's what was coming out of his speakers. My mom, she's from Michigan. She was listening to like a lot of Motown. That's what was coming out of her speakers. And so that's all I heard growing up. And then 13, 14, you get your own room and your own radio and you start listening to your own kind of music. And you're like, well, I want to hear something that's not that. And this is all happening right around the time when rap is heading toward becoming the most dominant like sound in America. And it all just matched up together perfectly. It was in, you mentioned like the basketball book, like basketball and rap have been intertwined forever. And then of course there's movies that deal with both basketball and rap. And they're all, it was all commingling. All of the coolest things seem to be coming from rap. And I said, well, I love this so much.
The way you write this book, you look at things through such different, interesting lenses. So there's a chapter, for example, called The Taxonomy of Advice from 50 Cent. Here's an example. The advice, how not to get beat up. The song, patiently waiting. The line, you know you shouldn't throw stones if you live in a glass house, and if you got a glass jaw, you should watch your mouth. Good advice. I agree.
Yes.
You've got Lil' Kim telling the future, answering really specific questions. Why did you want to take this approach to hip hop and rap music and, you know, in popular culture generally this way?
Well, because there are a ton of books about rap already, like really, really greatly written books, important books. And I wanted to write a book that talked about rap the way that I talk about rap when I'm hanging out with my friends, just sort of having a good time. But you can't just like show up and write all of the same stuff that's already been written or versions of that. You have to figure out new ways to write about these same things that have been written about. You know what I'm saying? Because if you do that, then it makes for a more interesting read, a more fulfilling read. Like you can go on the internet and find 100 articles about who the greatest rapper of all time is. That's an argument that has been had a bunch before. So I wanted to make sure to not do that kind of stuff in the book. I wanted to figure out clever ways into these things I wanted to talk about.
You describe it as about 94 to 2000 as the magic age mixtape. And you put together a playlist of songs from the era. and you called a Magic Age mixtape.
Yes.
Why do you say, a lot of people say Golden Age. Why did you say Magic Age?
Well, because, so this thing was happening when I was working on the book where I kept finding myself drifting back to the same stretch of music. I was like, I wanted to write about, as you mentioned, like Little Kim in 1996 or Missy Elliott in 1997 or Jay-Z or DMX in 1998. Like I kept finding myself in the same period and I wanted to know why. So I was researching a bunch and it turns out that that's like the quote is that's like a magic age of your life where when the stuff that you consume during that period imprints itself onto you differently than it does when you're rather than being 17 when you're 27 or 37. It just feels different. So everybody has a stretch of their life where the movies that they watch, they feel like those are the best movies, or the music that they heard, they feel like that was the best music. So when I was putting the chapter together, I said, oh, let me talk a little bit about that, about the magic age for me. And it was during that stretch from 94 to 2000. And then that's how that chapter came to be. It's secretly, it's one of my favorite chapters in the book, because when you have a book, there's a finite amount of space for you to cover an endless amount of material. So the goal isn't to cover every single thing. The goal is to write about something in such a way that when somebody else reads it, they can be like, oh, I know what my version of this thing is. You know what I'm saying? And the Magic Age mixtape is like the most open or bare example of me trying to do that there.
Well, there's a song on the mixtape, Elevators by Outkast, and you have a story about this song.
Yes.
With a guy you carpooled with back in the day who you call KO in the book. Before we listen to that track, because it's always good to listen to Outkast, tell us that story.
Okay, so KO was a teacher that I worked with. He and I lived in a neighborhood near each other, and we would carpool from our neighborhood to the school together. And because he was the driver, he got to pick the music every week. KO is an older white guy. He's like 65 or something like that. And like the first time that we rode together, second time, it was like super awkward because I think I was 28 or 29 at the time. I'm this young Mexican kid. He's this older white guy, and we're just like trying to find a common ground. And it turned out he was super into music. He knew every single thing there was to know about like this world of music that I never paid attention to, like bluegrass, rock, anything that came out before like 1980, he was all over it. It was incredible. And so we did it. We rode together back and forth to school for months, and he would pick the music every time. And finally I talked him into letting me pick something for us to listen to. And he's like, all right, we'll listen to one song. And so I spent a considerable amount of time trying to figure out what the one rap song was that I wanted for him to hear. Something that if you've never heard rap before, you listen to this and you understand, number one, how beautiful it can be. Number two, how interesting it can be. Number three, how wide open it is. Because a lot of people who don't listen to rap, they have a very specific image in their head of what rap looks like and a very specific sound in their head of what rap sounds like. So I need to find something that opens up all of the doors. And I landed on Elevators by Outkast, which I think is the most perfect rap song in the history of rap. And it was a great time. We had a great 4.5 minutes or whatever it was of riding in that car, just listening to Big Boy and Andre 3000 be geniuses.
Let's take a listen. This is Outkast, Elevators.
Yes, sir, two for the show. A couple of years ago on Headland and DeLow. What's the starter? Something good. Where me and my drove the martyr through the hood, just trying to find that hook up. Now every day we looked up at the ceiling, watching ceiling fans go round, trying to catch that feeling off instrumental. Had my pencil and plus my paper. We caught the 86 flop on your head to Decatur, writing rhymes, trying to find our spot off in that light. Light off in that spot, knowing that we can rock, doing a hole in the wall club. This shit here must stop, like freeze. We making the crowd move, but we not making no G's, and that's
a 1-2, dope. Then the Cadillac they call us went from Plagueis Ball to Boss, putting the stop up on the map. It's like Little Rock to banging. Say mother, that plaguing, they paying. We staying, legging vocals, locales done. Made it with them big boys up in this industry, Outkast. Yeah, them they making big noise, over a million sold to this day.
That is Outkast, and my guest is Shea Serrano. He is the author of the new book, Hip Hop and other things. You have this great chapter just all about Missy Elliott, and it begins with this poignant but unfortunately not surprising story about Missy Elliott, that earlier in her career, she was replaced in a video, someone lip-syncing to her, but someone who looked very different, someone deemed sort of more conventionally attractive. You write in the book, Missy, when the video was filmed, Missy was replaced with a thinner woman who had lighter skin. The woman lip-synced Missy's part. Missy explained in interviews later that she'd been told after the fact that per record label, she didn't have the right look to be included in the video. She recounted the event to The Guardian in 2001, saying, "They'd broken my heart. They said I could sing, I could write, but that I looked wrong. That was the lowest thing you could say. I didn't forget. That happened in 1993. So when you hear this story, it really gives another layer of power to the visuals that she put to her own work, to her groundbreaking work going forward. It just makes it, even when you think about what she put forth later, it's that story really gives it another dimension. How did she take back her power in her videos?
Okay, so the thing that you mentioned that happens in the early 1993, I believe. And so 4 years later, Missy has parlayed her growing reputation as a songwriter and a producer into this unique situation. Elektra Records offers her her own label. This is through Sylvia Rhone, by the way, the genius record executive. She offers her her own label, but she tells her, "I'll give it to you under the condition that you first deliver to me a solo project of your own, because I think you have it in you, and like I want for this to exist." And so Missy does. It takes her 2 weeks. She makes the Super Duper Fly album in 2 weeks, which is an unbelievable thing to think about, because this was 24 years ago and we still haven't caught up to how forward thinking it was, how futuristic it was. Like, you listen to it now and you're like, oh, this is what outer space sounds like. So she makes the video, she makes the album in 2 weeks. And then the very first video that she chooses to put out there from the album was for The Rain, which is maybe the most iconic song of her amazing songography. The opening shot of the video, which would then become the most iconic shot of her like visual career, is of Missy in the inflated with air black leather outfit. And she's just center picture. She's unmistakable. The magnified focus of a Hype Williams fisheye lens. And so she's there finally in full control, creative control, of her career. And the first thing she chose to show everyone was an exaggerated version of all of this stuff that 4 years earlier she had been told was bad and wrong and a reason that she couldn't be on screen. And she does that. And the song starts with her just reiterating over and over again, "Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly. I can't stand the rain. Me, I'm super." She says it 10 times in a row how cool she is, while showing you this picture of herself that they said wasn't going to work. And everybody knew watching it from that moment, this is like a transcendent moment in rap. It's like a flag planting moment in rap. Nothing was going to be the same after this. And she just did that off of this broken heart thing that happened to her 4 years ago. It's incredible.
Let's listen to Missy Elliott, Super Duper Fly.
Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly. Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly. Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly. Me, I'm super fly.
It's my window.
When the rain hits my window, I take it. Me some, me and Timberland, we sang a jangle. We so tight that you get our styles tangled. Sway your do-si-do like you loco. Can we get kinky tonight like Coco? So-so, you wanna play with my yo-yo? I smoke my on the D-Lo.
That's Missy Elliott, The Rain off of Super Duper Fly. So this is also what's so clever about the book. So the image you have in here of Missy Elliott is Missy Elliott with an umbrella leaning off of a light post like Gene Kelly from Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about
exactly
the illustrations by Arturo Torres. That's just such a great wink what you wanted to accomplish, the kind of conversations you had?
Well, so when I met Arturo, he was a baby. He was in his early 20s. He was at the very start of his career. And I've watched him over these last 7 years or whatever it is, 6 years we've been working together, become one of the finest illustrators in America. So my strategy at this point is just to like get out of his way. And I say, hey, this is, I send him a chapter and I'm like, hey, this is what I wrote. Tell me what you're thinking for the art. And then he, because he's like a comic book nerd and a movie nerd, and he's just like the nerdiest guy in the world, which is great. He'll read through the thing and he'll be like, well, what if we do this? And he always, what I really appreciate about his artwork is that he always goes like in the opposite direction of what you might think we should do. And so when we got to this chapter, he was like, oh, like we should do Gene Kelly, like actually in the rain. There's like, let's do that. And I said, well, I don't know what that means. Like, show me. And then so he showed me the clip and I'm like, oh yeah, we should definitely, yeah, let's do that. And then I just count on him to draw the picture in a way that like pulls something out of you. And he does that for every single chapter. And I think there's a total of like 70 plus like full page illustrations in the book, which it's really helpful because a lot of the stuff that I write is kind of like weird or sort of atypical, hopefully. And then if you can see a picture of it, it just helps pull everything back together and feel weighty or more meaningful than maybe it actually is.
My guest is Shay Serrano. The name of the book is Hip Hop and Other Things. It is out today. So aside from individuals, you also write about events and moments in hip hop. And you have a chapter that's a play-by-play of the 1995 Source Awards. So why was this night important for the trajectory and the culture of hip hop?
Man, so this is one of the biggest, I'm going to pause real quick and say, I always have such a good time anytime I come on the show because you're super prepared for everything. And it makes me feel very good. I'm like, man, she really sat down and read this book. This is incredible to me.
And my
previous, crazy to think about that.
Okay. My previous life too.
Sorry, go ahead.
You know, a decade at MTV. Yeah. We'll do that to you.
Okay, so the 95 Source Awards were a giant moment in rap. And everybody is familiar with some of the imagery from that. Like everybody remembers or everybody has seen the picture or the video clip or the gif of Suge Knight up on stage doing the whole, if you don't want your producers in your videos dancing and it would come to death. Everybody remembers that. Like that's imprinted on all of our brains forever. Even if you weren't alive at the time, you have seen that picture on the internet. So I wanted to go back and go through every single thing that happened that night because there were so many other big things. We talked about Outkast earlier. That's when they showed up on the map. They won like Best New Artist and they got booed by the crowd in New York, which is crazy to think about. Now the greatest rap duo of all time got booed for winning Best New Artist. There's this incredible Death Row performance that opens the show. You have Snoop and Dr. Dre up there. Every cool thing that could have happened or every substantial thing that could have happened that night happened that night. And so I wanted to spend a bunch of time and listen. I'm going to rewatch from beginning to end the entire award show. And I'm going to take a ton of notes and I'm going to explain or talk about each of these moments and like what it led to in the future. It's super rap nerdy, but I really enjoyed it. I had a great time working on it.
You end the book on Tupac and Biggie, and I'm not going to ask you to make a point, but I'm going to read something that you wrote. No two solo rappers have ever been as perfectly and inextricably linked as Tupac and Biggie. No two rappers ever will. They were fated together as a pairing by the cosmos, a perfect union of contrasting styles, contrasting ideologies, and contrasting personas, and contrasting skillets. Why did you want to end with them?
Because those are the, like, everybody knows those two. Right. They have to be in the book somehow. I wanted an interesting way to write about them, and I wanted to end on, like, a big thing. Let's have an anchor. The last chapter is the anchor in whatever book it is that you happen to be working on. So let's go out with the two biggest rap personalities in my life, maybe in the history of rap. Let's end on those two, but let's talk about them in a way that maybe they haven't been talked about yet, hopefully.
And that means you have to read the book and finish that chapter. The name of the book is Hip Hop and Other Things, a collection of questions asked, answered, and illustrated. It is illustrated by Arturo Torres and written by my guest, Shay Serrano. Shay, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
This is my favorite tradition. Every 2 years, you and I talk for 20 minutes, and it's great. I'm having a great time.
See you back here in 2023.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.